man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway, and today we're going to be talking about some movies. But first, before we jump into that, I'm going to have to introduce you to my friends. So let's jump right into it and talk to them. Alonzo, Duralde, you're first up. Let me know what's good.
Oh gosh, Iffy, I'll tell you, every week it's a thing of just trying to figure out, like, what is good? Why am I getting out of bed? What's the point of all this? And something that that I recently discovered, Dave and I have been, obviously eating at home a lot in the last 8 or so months. And we've been getting a CSA box every week, which is great. So, like, lots of fresh produce. And discovering today that if you get the long stem broccolini, that you can actually cut up the stem and put in the leaves and eat all of it. Like, unlike big ass broccoli where it comes on a branch that you don't want to deal with and you just, dump it right into your compost heap, broccolini, you can eat the stems and they give you a nice crunch.
Ooh. Broccolini's dope.
That's what I got. That's what's nice. Good this week.
That is good.
I like a broccolini too. A nice crispy broccolini. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get some garlic and red pepper flakes. You're set.
That other voice you hear is none other than Drea Clark. So Drea, what's good?
Drea has an opinion on everything, Clark. Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I'm with Alonzo. It's funny. I've said this before, but I love that we start this way because I always like to know what's good with you guys. And I think that there's something just healthy and lovely anyway about centering your thoughts on gratitude and, oh, yay for us. But like Alonzo, sometimes when I'm thinking ahead of time of, huh, I wonder what I'll say for what's good this week. Some weeks are harder than others. And those are the weeks that I come up with really specific things, like this week, which is, so temperatures are starting to drop in LA. And so it's a little cooler. It's a little cooler in my home. And in my bathroom, I keep my bath mat looped over, just slung over the top of my tub because I don't like it on the floor. There's cat litter and whatever. It just seems cleaner that way. My cats, who are so adorable and also getting chillier, in the last couple of weeks have started doing this thing where they go in and they kind of pull the mat down onto the ground. And they basically build a little fort for themselves. So they sit on the mat, but with the shower curtain over them. And so, like, I'll come into the bathroom and just see tails and a lump in the shower curtain. And it is the cutest thing. And like all cute things, all I want to do is immediately destroy it and grab them because it's very hard not to. But come on, my animals make a fort.
So is this a thing where if you actually got them like a cat blanket or whatever, they would just completely ignore it and keep using the bath pad in the shower?
Yeah. Zero out of 10 would not use. Disinterestation. No. They only like to do things if it's messing up my stuff.
Of course.
That's cat activity.
That's how cats do. Yeah. Hey, Iffy, what's good with you? Thanks, Alonzo. Well,
What's good with me? Oh, well, that's simple. For me, it's just been getting back in that gym. I know it's the day after Thanksgiving, but I've been hitting it pretty hard. Finally back on my train and ready to get back to that bod that everyone remembers me for having, but don't quite realize that's an old bod. That's what people keep showing me when I had those abs. I'm like, ooh, them boys ain't showing up like that anymore. Them boys are on vacation. They hiding. But I do it, for the way I feel and all that stuff, not just, to post thirst traps. That is a huge part of it, but it is not what it's all about. But now, it's getting back to stricter things, working out from home, seeing what I could get in, doing lots of hikes too. I'm a nature boy. We've talked about this. So That's what's good.
So we also see a lot of long-stemmed broccolini in your future.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. Deep. I was already in the broccolini. You know, broccolini bunch. But now.
Well,
you know,
whereas my iPhone step counter, I think just thinks I'm dead now.
Oh, my iPhone step counter absolutely is like, don't connect me to health. They won't like this. Yeah. As you know, Iffy, every time one of your Thirst Trap posts comes up on my timeline, I always want to respond and be like, I'm really proud of the work you're putting in. I don't like to see this, but I'm so proud of you.
You're making me really uncomfortable,
oh
but
my goodness,
good on you.
I don't know where to look. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's now they're back on the way. They're back. We're on the road back.
Great.
To hope you're looking forward to that.
Super. Oh. I'll burn calories blushing. It'll be great.
Well, today marks the final episode in our mini-series covering the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, which means we're talking about the third movie in that trilogy, the last movie, The World's End. Christmas Zaddy movie minutes, of course, are going to be dropped. We are in peak Christmas time. We are officially in undebatable Christmas time. You know, for some,
the floodgates are open.
Yeah. For some, it starts, you know, right after Halloween. And for Alonzo, it's year round. But but now we are in undeniable Christmas territory. Get your red caps. Get under those mistletoes. Erect the trees. It's time. And of course, we have staff picks. But first, it's that time of year again. It's the day after Thanksgiving, which means we must anoint the official Who Shot Ya Turkeys of the Year. This could be an actor, a movie, an organization, a trend, anything that we consider a dud or simply did not live up to its full potential. There's no limit to the number of turkey titles we can hand out. That all being said, let's begin with the canonical labeling of the Turkeys of the Year. Alonzo, would you like to begin?
Sure. I have a couple of movies in mind, but it really, to be fair, in thinking about 2020 and just, you know, the kind of behavior that drove me up the wall, my main turkey this year is Christopher Nolan. I still haven't seen Tenet. I'm going to watch it when it's available at home. But holy cow, the whole dance that we had to go through about pushing it back and pushing it back and then insisting on theatrical in 2020 and then showing it in theaters, even though most people weren't going to theaters, and then it underperformed and then it was our fault anyway somehow. It was like, dude, I get it. You want us to see your movie on the big screen. It'll keep till 2021 or till whenever the vaccine happens. This whole nonsense could have been avoided, but you just kept pushing it. And so I don't think we can pin this on Warner Brothers. I think Nolan, whatever Nolan wants, Nolan gets. And Christopher
God.
Nolan,
my
you
favorite
were,
musical song.
Thank you. Yes. Gwen Verdon did it unforgettably.
Whatever Nolan wants.
Nolan gets. So Christopher Nolan is my number one turkey of 2020.
Mm. I also had Tenet at the top of my list with a bullet, as I'm sure we all did. I would like to say that what did get tied into that, because I'm 100% with Alonzo and watching the back and forths about that, and then sitting here in Los Angeles where it hasn't even been an option. We thankfully haven't had theaters open for so long. It also frustrated me because I resented being on the side of cheering against a movie opening theatrically because I so much want theaters to be open.
Of course.
And I want the people that work at theaters to have their jobs back. I want the films that thrive from that. And so having it turn into this thing that felt narcissistic and just about one film rather than
the
what
industry.
Could be, like if you're going to be putting all of this time, I think the federal government should be doing a lot more to support people in general. But in terms of having a forward look at the arts and the people that work in them, and that's everything adjacent to it too. Theaters and cinema culture is a huge part of that. So my turkey was that rallying cry got lost in the eye rolls for this, like, what felt like a vanity drive by the end, rather than, you know, putting it under the guise of, we, you know, let's rally behind movies. Like, you don't want me to rally behind movies. You want me to get in psyched for your weird backward shit. Wait, should I do another one instead of just pillowing on?
No, you could do that, because then I'm going to use that to pillow on your pillow. Because, yeah, it was going to be Tenet. Same old thing. but Tenet will roll into my next one. So Tenet, yeah, I think we all were in unison. Tenet,
you're better at segues than me. This is fitting. Yeah.
But I'm also going to give one to AMC Theaters and their kind of temper tantrums, being mad at, you know, company. Because once again, it's this like weird thing where everyone likes capitalism until they get capitalismed, you know, like, oh, we're all, yeah, free, you know, free market, all this stuff. Wait, you're finding a way to make money without me? No, this isn't fair. We must make contracts where I get money. And then somehow, some way,
we're never showing another Universal picture again until we make a deal with Universal, of course.
Yeah, no one could come to my birthday party. Yeah, so they're definitely my turkey of the year for that whole move, and, you know, whining and not being proactive in finding ways to safely get movies to people, but instead leaning on forcing people to come to your theaters. And when you didn't create a leeway or an app or any, you know, like, I think Alamo was doing, like, you know, you could rent through like an app, through like all these other smaller companies had the foresight to be like, oh, let's find a way to kind of recoup some of these costs but still be safe. And you were like, no, let's force people to sit in our subpar theaters. You haven't stepped it up since people like Alamo and your Arclights came in. You're still like, no, we're going to do this, but you're still trying to raise prices.
I love Iffy having beef with AMC in general.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan.
Another turkey for me this year was Antebellum, a movie that should have been smarter and more incisive, and really just kind of felt like some white studio execs being, get me another one of those Get Outs, and coming up with something that was just horrifyingly racist and stupid.
One of mine was something that we discussed on this motion picture podcast, and I have regretted since this day that I did not change my own vote to match Iffy, and that is Mulan deciding to shoot in I'm not going to get the pronunciation,
the Uyghur,
the Xinjiang region, that is where they have these literal detention camps, and they're holding this Muslim ethnic minority. They shot there, as I'm sure was part of their contract. Then they were thanked in the credits. It was part of the boycott. The boycott also was referencing some of the actors, especially the lead actress, supporting the Chinese government while the Hong Kong protests were going on. So yes, a lot of mistakes were made behind the scenes with Mulan, a film that I did enjoy, but real turkey in the sense of, do your due diligence and then do right by it if you're a studio. Like, my God, if there's literal detention camps threatening a minority, a religious minority and ethnic minority, maybe shoot somewhere else. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Well, speaking of films that we talked about on the show, I still bear the scars of Doolittle.
Doolittle!
I know January.
That was this year?
That was this year. I know. A million years ago in January. We should have known. Cats and Doolittle, I think, were the like two of the four horsemen of the apocalypse of 2020. You know, the one cat, the talking animals from Doolittle, the dog in The Call of the Wild, and one other thing. Those were the four horsemen, you know.
You guys, as you know, bring on Doolittle. I can't get enough of all of the, like, farting and pooping jokes in Doolittle. What a movie. That was good. I'm glad you brought that back up, Alonzo.
Rectal bagpipes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I have another movie one, but it's less the movie and more what surrounds it, which is Cuties, the film that played in the World Cinema Competition at Sundance last year. Won a very deserved directing award. It is by a Senegalese French woman based on elements from her own life, was capturing the idea of otherism and the idea of how we sexualize young girls and how that comes up in like the activities they do, such as dance teams. And that was hit with this tsunami of hatred and presumption by a lot of people who didn't see it. And if you did see that movie and were uncomfortable by it or didn't think that it landed, or that's fair. Like, things don't always like hit the points they're aiming for.
But at least you saw it.
Yeah, at least you saw it. And I think that, you know, we have such a rush to get rid of any acknowledgement of context when we're arguing about things. And watching a film like Cuties and the director behind it suffer as a result. You guys, I would call it a turkey. I would use that exact word for it.
Yeah, all the right-wing politicians that piled onto it and the idiots on Twitter, they are the turkeys.
Well, it's very interesting because there's so much like whataboutism around it, right? Of being like, oh, yes, you're making this point, but if you're making the da-da-da-da, it's like, but one, you haven't seen it, so you don't even know. And these select screenshots that you're getting can be seen in all these toddlers in tiaras, all these reality shows that you've never bat an eye at.
Included in the turkey should be whoever was at Netflix that came up with that poster that set everybody off.
The marketing, that's what set it off. That was 100%. Yeah. None of this would have happened if that artwork had not come up.
I'm so glad I almost missed this. Of course, I'm going to have to throw a huge fat turkey at New Mutants and the director. Like, both, that's a double turkey. Bomb to the movie. Bomb to the director. A bigger one to the director, and doubling down on whitewashing characters. It's never good. And if I had a job for every time some white creator said that the best person got the job in response to why it's not diverse, man, I'd be Steven Spielberg. I'd be rolling in it, because it isn't. And we have to stop trying to mystify everything and look, and be very honest of like the connections and lots of times nepotism that is used to get work in Hollywood. And here's the thing, and I'm going to say it, I say it the same way I say it to everyone. It's not necessarily a bad thing. I know when I get on, I'm hiring all my homies. The problem is white people don't have homies of color. So you can't hire people of color. And instead of owning up to that and reaching out and maybe tapping in, we, because everyone who's a creator has a tiny drop of narcissism to think that we are have something worth being watched, do not look inwards and be like, oh, I should probably, you know, do something about it. And thus we have this history of whiteness. It's funny because it's this, when you talk about it, it's always so scary because everyone just takes it as this like huge affront against them. But it's like a simple problem that lots of times isn't your fault. It's part of redlining. You grew up around no black people because systematic reasons kept you. You went to an Ivy League school, met all the people in National Lampoon. None of them were black because systematically black people couldn't break in there. So now that you have this knowledge that people are talking about it, it now is up to you to make that change. And if you don't, then that's where the problem is. No one's blaming you for every step that was kind of out of your control to get you where you are, but you having this knowledge and doubling down instead of being like, you know what, you're right, let's change it, that's where you're fucking up.
I like that basically everything Iffy said after he said New Mutants was not what I expected to hear. I love it. I can't wait until you get your own Tyler Perry compound.
I promise I will pay people a living wage.
There you go. Oh, don't union bust, please.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I have a general one that involves a group of artists. And that is, I have an enormous turkey I would like to squish over the heads of J.K. Rowling, of Gina Carano, of this week, Mr. John Cleese.
There's been
this thing of, it's this upsetting in this sort of like, ugh, don't meet your heroes sort of way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you aren't familiar, all of them in different forms, J.K. Rowling certainly in a much more assertive, aggressive way have been contributing a lot to anti-trans sentiment, really harmful and hurtful and dismissive views. And Gina Carano was this thing that came up with a lot of comments she made online, and John Cleese as well. And it's this thing of, please say nothing. First, be best, as my hero says. Be yes. best. But also, there's zero, I shouldn't know that. I guess there's so often that we hear about like, I just don't want to hear about your life. So like, I don't want to hear your critiques about people's lives. And
yeah, like if you're rich and powerful and you want to talk about like, let's save the snail darter or whatever, like, great, fine. Use your clout in that direction. But if you're going to punch down on an already oppressed
yes.
a segment of the population, go fuck yourself. Like nobody yeah. needs that.
And there's people that, It's this tie too. It's not just how harmful it is to the people who already share their negative viewpoints, like to just have that exacerbated and fed and like
affirmed.
Affirmed. Thank you. It's also really hurtful because I'd say for all three of those, there are a lot of people who related to the work and that they've put out that are trans allies that look at it, that looked at the Harry Potter world and could find connections, that looked at characters that Gina Carano's played, including on The Mandalorian, and had like, oh, what a nice physicality to see in a woman. And anyway, so it's upsetting and depressing. And I really hope that people get their hearts and minds together in the future and also just shut the fuck up. If they're going to be jerks.
As David Lynch would say, fix your hearts or die.
Oh, yes. Ooh. That's my last turkey, you guys.
Yeah, that was
stick a fork in it.
All right, it's done. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about the world's end just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
It's done. You really landed that.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we host
Round Springfield. Round Springfield is a Simpsons adjacent podcast where we talk to your favorite Simpsons writers, voice actors, and everyone who's worked on the show to talk about shows that aren't The Simpsons. So we're going to be talking to people like David X. Cohen, Yeardley Smith, Tim Long about other projects they've worked on, sometimes projects that didn't go well, some failures,
yeah.
some rejection,
some failed pilots, some failed life events.
Yeah, we just talked to all the failures of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So if you really love your Simpsons trivia and want to get to know the people who have worked on The Simpsons a little bit better, come by Round Springfield.
Every other week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Sophie Waddyway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Alonso Duralde.
And today we're talking about The World's End. Drea, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
I would be delighted, Iffy. Thank you for asking. Okay, so this one I'm taking directly from the worldwide internet. Gary King, played by Simon Pegg, is an immature 40-year-old who's dying to take another stab at an epic pub crawl that he last attempted 20 years earlier. He drags his reluctant buddies back to their hometown and sets out for a night of heavy drinking. As they make their way towards their ultimate destination, the fabled World's End Pub, Gary and his friends attempt to reconcile the past and present. However, the real struggle is for the future, when their journey turns into a battle for mankind. Dun, dun, dun. I should have told you I just came up with that off the top of my head.
I would have believed.
Oh, yeah. Here, yeah. Let me just stumble through something. Yep.
No, that's solid. I mean, yeah, let's go ahead and kick things off with a question that's kind of a callback. Because, Alonzo, you said that this was your favorite of the Cornetto trilogy.
Yes.
Why is that?
It's funny. I mean, just watching it again last night, I was sort of thinking about what it is about this reverberates the most with me. And if this were a movie I were taking on its own, it would be one thing, but I think in the scope of the two films that come before it, you have Simon Pegg, who has not only acting in but co-writing these characters that are sort of different aspects of men who have to get it together. You know, in the case of Sean, he's very much kind of a slacker who is sort of sleepwalking through life. You know, in the case of Detective Angel, you know, he's much more like he's so focused on work and so, you know, incredibly like obsessed with doing a great job. But in the same way, he doesn't have deep relationships. He doesn't have love in his life because there isn't a room for women there. And so then you've got this character now who is such a fuck up and so stuck in his own adolescence in literal and figurative ways that I don't know. I just, there's something about the kind of middle age quality of this movie, I think, that's really fascinating in terms of being a reckoning with your past and being about, like, you know, getting yourself together and getting out of the circumstances that you grew up in, but how easy it is to get pulled back into it, and how so much of the trappings of our youth that we think we've transcended and gotten past are still there waiting to grab us by the ankles and take us by surprise. So yeah, I just think that of the sort of interplay between genre and kind of, you know, men coming of age or coming of middle age in this case, stories that Wright and Penn are doing, this one to me feels like the most, you know, mature in a lot of ways. I mean, not just literally in terms of the plot, but as far as just the crafting of it and the depth of how awful this character is, and yet how we are still, you know, kind of, we have some stock in his redemption, you know, and we want things to work out in one way or another. And it marries, you know, the sort of like alien genre and the whole kind of Village of the Damned thing where, you know, or Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where everybody's being replaced by people who look just like them, and about, you know, the best and worst of humanity butting heads with each other. And it's all packaged in this plot that on its surface is this kind of cool sort of like, kind of, you know, old school, you know, like that movie in terms of like, you know, middle-aged guys trying to recapture their youthful glory and this literal, you know, journey they have to go on that's, you know, I don't know, there's just a lot working here that I think all meshes together really beautifully.
I think that's all well said. I don't think, you know, having rewatched the Cornetto trilogy as we've just done, the Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and now The World's End, I feel like if you'd asked me at different times which my favorites were, I would have been like, oh, Shaun of the Dead. And then I watch Hot Fuzz again, and I'm like, oh, this one's so good. I don't think I could choose a favorite from this, if only because one of the things that's so impressive to me about them as creators is how different each of these films are. And
totally.
I talked about it a little when we discussed Hot Fuzz, but especially looking at what Simon Pegg was doing as co-writer, and obviously, of course, Edgar Wright's influence on that, of crafting completely different characters for he and Nick Frost. I mean, there's a lot of actors and actresses that pop up in a bunch of these, but especially for the two of them as leads, what their task to do in each film is so different. There's constantly a buddy feeling. There's constantly like their rapport. It takes advantage of their strengths. But the two characters that we end up with in The World's End are night and day from Hot Fuzz, are night and day from Shaun of the Dead. And I think that's such a commendable thing. And there's something so sophisticated about the writing of The World's End that comes across the more you watch it, in just small reveals. Like, there's all these allusions to how, you know, when he's trying to get the gang back together and everybody's like, Andy's coming, which is Nick Frost's character.
Yeah.
And then you don't really find out what they're falling out with until literally end of second act. And it's just in this small aside, like,
yeah, like a throwaway.
The idea of feathering in exposition at that, like, that is not an easy thing. And there's something about Edgar Wright's films are so accessible and they're fun, even when they're taking on bigger topics like this one is. But I think that there's so much work being done here that's not always acknowledged as like proper craftsmanship because they're so fun.
Yeah. And before I even really get even more into it, I want to talk about this this article that you texted us last night, Alonzo, about Simon Pegg talking about where he was in his life at the time.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and I mean, I guess it's not like it's always been there, but I think it really hit home for me watching it again now, you know, 7 years later, like how much of an addiction narrative this is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it literally starts in, you know, his opening monologue is basically an AA testimony, even though it's full of bravado and like, you know, utter sort of rose colored glasses about his misspent youth, you know. But the whole thing is there's such a sweaty addict's desperation to this movie. And it's something that, you know, Peg knew very well by that point in his life and was, you know, fairly, I think, new in the process of his own recovery in terms of being able to like channel that into art is pretty impressive.
I've talked about it before. I think when we discussed A Star Is Born, if as someone who's been intricately involved in someone else facing an addiction and trying to support them and also all of the heartbreak and horror that comes with that. So I think I had definitely gone through at least one intervention or two by the time I first saw this movie. So that was the thing. When I think of The World's End, I think of it as a tale of addiction. And there's something so interesting about the fact that when we meet them, so Nick Frost's character is already sober. He's gotten sober as a result. And then Peg's character is very much not, and very much in the throes of it, and in the throes of the ugliest, sweaty is a great word for it. Like at the ugliest, sweatiest stages of, I'm fine this way. And that's the other thing of this film that stands out to me is it actually made me think about when we talked about Bad Hair, because Bad Hair, I thought, had all of these threads of like cultural elements or personal demons or, you know, like all sorts of things, but they didn't coagulate a film term, I'm sure. But The World's End, that I felt very much, I'm like, oh, I see this addiction through line. I see literally at the end, his friend is running behind him bar to bar, watching him destroy himself, watching him do all of these terrible things, and is literally like, I can't leave him, even though I'm putting myself at risk at this. Like, that spoke to me. And then it turns the corner sharply into Alienville, and that still fits. Like, that's
it's
nuts.
Still an intervention at the end.
It's still
the Bill Nye voice.
And also
says
the idea of having the person that we've been watching destroy himself make the argument for Earth, which is, oh, you can't win us over. We suck.
We will not be told.
That's amazing.
I know. That's pretty much how I felt through all this, too, is like it, in this, what I think really landed is the specificity of the addiction story. I feel like there's a lot of addiction story. This is like a specific type of addiction, I think, we hear of or have seen before, where it's someone trying to relive a moment in their life. And we've all seen this, like, towny person stuck in the town. They realize that they peaked in high school and they know it. They see all their friends, and so they just have to relive it. They have to be in this realm, and they wish they were in this time warp. And that's why what's so funny is like it switches everything up. Like it out of the trilogy, this is the first time we see Nick be the straight man, and now you have Simon being the goofy person who, and so that's such a like great knowing thing of being like, okay, this is a trilogy, so let's switch things up. Right. And I think also in both Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, we knew like the thing that the movie is about. We see it so early on, and it feels like it takes so long to see the aliens. Like
yes.
Like they really are showing us like the, like it's almost like before the first two movies are the thing, and then we show the heart, and this movie starts with the heart of it, and then the thing comes. And
yeah, you have to wait for that first bathroom fight to even know that there really is something going on, you know?
Yeah.
I think what's really bold about this is that, and especially for like young viewers you know, love these movies. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are people who grew up watching these films, and like Shaun of the Dead was probably their conduit to then actual zombie movies, you know, yeah. And Hot Fuzz was their conduit to actual, like, you know, male bonding action movies. But both of those movies are very aspirational in a way. Like, you know, Shaun may not have his life together, but he's so, like, smart and effective with the aliens, and he knows what to do, and he's brave, and he, like, you know, sees everybody through. And the character in Hot Fuzz, you know, may not have a personal life, but he's such a good cop, and he's so effective, and he's a good friend to the Nick Frost character. And here you are given a character who is a fuck up and who mm-hmm. is a disaster, and in no way is an audience, if an audience member sees themselves in that, that's a thing, that's a mirror they don't want to be looking at. Yeah. You know, and so I think for a lot of people who had a vicarious joy in the first two movies, this was like, no, I don't, not this. No, yeah. not him. Not today. No, thank you.
I want to shout that Alonzo said, what I had forgotten, the fight in the bathroom, there are some physical fights in this that are so beautifully choreographed.
Yeah.
There's stunt work that's like, when you talk about this movie, when you describe it, it is not the thing that comes up. But in rewatching it, like, there is a 5-on-5 brawl in the world's largest pub restroom that is so fun, so beautifully shot, really fluid, like, obviously has some incredible stunt choreography behind
Nick
it.
Nick Frost is doing, like, pro wrestling moves.
Oh yeah. And I have to appreciate, like, Nick Frost, nice big belly. He's like, oh yeah, he's bringing this. He's literally wears a cardigan the whole time. Mm-hmm. And when he's like ready for business, he, like, unbuttons the cardigan.
Yeah.
A robot with legs for arms.
Oh yeah. But even in all that, like, Nick Frost is bringing this physicality throughout that I'm like, oh yeah, Kevin James could never.
The action sequences are great, just throughout and through. And also, just, you still have that, like, Edgar Wright wit in it, like the scene, the speaking of the legs for arms, the line before you see her is like, there's nothing between us. And then she comes in between them and knocks them aside.
Oh, yeah.
And it just,
when the robot who swallowed Nick Frost's wedding ring says, I want you inside me, and he points his hand into her stomach to get the ring back.
That's the one last thing I want to tap on before we vote is, like, what did you think of the ending? Because the ending to me, even though everyone's fine with it, it really feels like an ending where this guy who's kind of been the fuck up this whole time gets what he wants, but fucked over everyone in the world.
Which is his
it.
Pattern, you know, yeah. like, yeah. which totally makes sense. But I think it's also, and again, I think also a daring move that makes people not like this movie as much is that you leave with that feeling of, it does sort of play around with the notion that, like, okay, if an alien species shows up, then they are most likely a superior intelligence to us because they figured out interplanetary travel when we haven't. And rather than just blow them out of the sky or, like, sneeze on them and make them go away, maybe it might behoove us to listen to what they have to say. And if we don't, then we deserve what we get.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a bleaker ending. Although, you know, you look at Shaun of the Dead and that one's like, oh yeah, your best friend's a zombie and lives in your shed. Mm. It's not like they're consequence free and all of these.
Mm-hmm,
and in Hot Fuzz, like, his best friend loses his father to whatever. So that
to
there
a swan.
Is that. This one to a swan. This one definitely feels more dramatic. And I do, that was my one thing of, oh, this idea of the interconnectivity of telecommunications being part of this didn't read into any sort of deeper metaphor. And that's the main reason I had with, I don't know if this ending feels as boom as the other ones did, because everything else dovetails in so nicely. But that said, I found it satisfying in a weird way of that these guys were like, oh yeah, two of them are blanks, but they're still living better lives than they did when they were humans. And, you know, the other ones have found some sort of fulfillment in themselves. And then you get to see, yeah, it is that idea of Gary King, ultimate fuck up, nothing but bad choices, but he gets to have his like dream ending.
His teenage posse, and he gets to be Gary King.
He literally has his teenage posse who revere him. But when he orders 5 waters at the end, to this gal's heart, I was like, oh, that's beautiful.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, a nice callback to the setup line from Nick Frost talking about how, like, that's the really manly thing to do is to order water at a bar, you know?
Right? That you go in and you're on all these tough guys and ordering the water. I didn't even catch that, Alonzo.
Oh, thank you. I know. That makes it even, that's, yeah.
And Nick Frost even says, like, you know, when it's a bunch of, like, rugby guys with painted faces at the bar, and these are all guys have tattoos on their faces.
Oh, I gotta watch it again.
Yeah.
Write and peg, they can write.
Oh, man. Well, it's time for us to write our reviews. So you know what it is. Would you buy it on physical media, stream it, or skip it? For your final review, you will let you kick it off, Drea.
I would buy it on physical media. First, I'll try. We'll have to come up with another term so we can start this with an S. I would purchase it on physical media. I think this movie is fantastic. I'm thrilled we did the whole trilogy. Each of these has stood up even better than I expected, and it's been a joy to rewatch them. And The World's End, I think, is so meaningful. I mean, it's, I'm sure, a good view for anyone, but if you've ever been, are an addict, watched through someone struggling through that, I think that there's a lot of fun yet insightful things here.
Yeah, I would absolutely also purchase it on physical media. And I agree with Drea. I think now that I've had the chance to watch these again, it is harder for me to pick out a favorite because they all are really great. And I think there is a way to sort of look at them as this one collective. They do, even though each is individually so different, they do tie in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I mean, like, I definitely, my esteem of Hot Fuzz has just, like, skyrocketed. I don't know what went wrong the first time I saw it, but I really dig it now. But, yeah, I think as a whole, this whole thing really holds up. And, yeah, whoever's been saying there should be a Criterion box set, there should be a Criterion box set.
That was your boy. yeah, I am also on the same one. I am snagging it on physical media. Literally now, clicking place order. And it should be at my house tomorrow.
Little drone Criterion, will drop it off.
You look, you could be charging me way more, and I'm gonna get it from you.
Hear his call, Criterion.
Yes. that was great. But we gotta go to break. So we'll be right back after you hear from another show for Maximum Fun. I keep talking to camera. Y'all can't see that, but just know I pointed at you.
Hey friends, Jesse here, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have some really great news to share with you. This year has brought a lot of changes for all of us. And one tradition that we were grateful to be able to hold on to is our annual pin sale to benefit charity. This year, through your generosity and love of pins, you helped raise $95,400 for Give Directly. If you're a member and you bought pins, they'll ship in January. In the meantime, your support will provide direct cash relief to families impacted by COVID-19 across the United States. Even in this incredibly tough year, the MaxFun community remains extraordinarily kind. And whether or not you bought pins, you can continue to help by heading to givedirectly.org. And as always, thank you.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
And now it's time for the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute. Alonzo gets 1 minute to discuss every Christmas movie he saw this past week. Alonzo, are you ready?
Yes. Let's go.
All right, then. Go.
Okay, so on Netflix, Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square. Look, Dolly, we all adore you. You're a national icon. Thank you for your donations to the COVID vaccine. This movie is really not good, and it's just don't watch it. I beg you. Over on Lifetime, Taste of Christmas, one of the worst I've ever seen. Needed way more Nia Vardalos, but I'm glad she got a check out of it. Feliz Navidad with Mario Lopez. Better than you might think, mainly because of Annalyn McCord. Mario Lopez can't stop talk show hosting, and it's weird when he's trying to be an actor. Okay, now on on Hallmark, Nashville Christmas Carol. If you're going to have a Christmas Carol movie, your Scrooge needs to actually be a bad person and not just a woman who has to forgive her old boyfriend. That was ridiculous. But Winona Judd is a delight. The Christmas House, we're going to be talking about on this show because it's the gay one. Very excited that it exists. The Angel Tree, Jill Wagner, you're great, but this was not. And Godwin Christmas, Second Chance, First Love. This entire franchise is the barf of puke. Stop making them Hallmark.
The barf of puke. Wait, so did you just say that one of them was The Christmas Carol and it's about a woman named Carol?
No. Although they've done that one. They have one called It's Christmas Carol. Nashville Christmas Carol. And it's a bunch of country folks in it. But the main person is not like a Scroogey Scrooge. She's a careerist woman who needs to let go of her resentment against her ex-boyfriend throwing her under the bus one time.
It
seems a lot
of
effort.
Do you remember when Kristen Wiig and Will Ferrell did that?
Deadly Adoption, yes.
I want to make one starring Kristen Wiig like that called It's Christmas Carol. It's just her going bonkers.
They did that one. I mean, they did that title, sadly, but I'm sure they'll go to something.
I'll find something similar, as long as I can do a Carol pun.
Yes.
So, Alonzo, I'm always impressed with you watching all of these, but I am even more impressed because your deep knowledge of Christmas films should be recognized as more than just the contemporary trash that you're forced to take in for everyone else's benefits. And you wrote all about it in Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which people should read and buy and get as little stocking stuffers, because the movies in that one, not to disparage on Nashville Christmas, are actually good. So you can check those out.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
It's Christmas Carol.
Exclamation point. That was the one where Carrie Fisher literally plays all the ghosts. And it was like, okay, we can have four Canadians or we can have Carrie Fisher. Pick
Obviously.
One. And they went with Carrie Fisher. Who could blame them?
Okay, now I got to watch it.
All right. Well, speaking of stuff you got to watch, Dre, it's time for our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So, Drea, why won't you start?
I will start, sir. You just watch me. So I'm thinking like Thanksgiving weekend, which hopefully people are spending in their own homes with just the people they live with in safety and concern for themselves and healthcare workers everywhere. And I like to think of like, oh, what do I want to like? I want something cozy and just like joyful. And a film that came out during all of this sort of quarantine-ness that I caught very late in the game, but brought me that joy, was Eurovision, the story of Fire Saga or something like that. Speaking of Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, it was such a just happy delight spot for me. I was expecting it to be a whole lot cheesier, but it had the perfect level of Eurovision cheesiness to it, an actual Eurovision, like stars from Croatia and stuff. It's properly called the Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. It's on Netflix, and it was just happy and nice. And if you've ever wanted to see Dan Stevens as a very sexy, late gay blooming Russian singer, have I got the movie for you.
I didn't love it, but I always laugh at a Ya Ya Ding Dong meme on Twitter.
Oh, God,
so there is that.
Play Ya Ya Ding Dong! Yeah. If I remade that, I'd have Iffy play that character.
That guy was hot. I forget who he is, but I'm a fan. So when The World's End came out, Edgar Wright did a really great series that he programmed at the New Beverly. He's done quite a bit of programming there over the years. And really, he did several nights of films that tied into sort of different strains of what's going on in this movie. So like there was a night of, you know, robot movies, and there was a night of alien movies, and movies about people partying wildly for one crazy night, you know. And one of them was about Middle-age friends, basically, and it was the musical It's Always Fair Weather, which is the third and last of the Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly collaborations at MGM. They had previously done On the Town and Singin' in the Rain, both of which are considered among the greatest musicals of all time. This one, the director's relationship had soured at that point, so that was one thing. And also, this is a movie about three World War II buddies reuniting 10 years later to discover that they don't really have anything in common and they don't really like each other anymore. So that was a tough sell for mainstream audiences at the time. But it's a really charming and smart movie. It's got some terrific musical numbers, particularly Dolores Gray's Thanks But No Thanks. But it is one of those sort of rare movies about the ideals of friendship and how a lot of times they fall apart. And many times people who don't like each other anymore, it's because they don't like themselves. And I think that, you know, you definitely see that as an inspiration directly for The World's End. But, you know, if you might not immediately think about, oh, yes, an MGM musical when talking about a movie that influenced Edgar Wright. So, yeah, it is not currently streaming per se, but it's rentable in all the places. So check out It's Always Fair Weather.
Nice.
Ooh,
all right,
okay.
Iffy, edge of my seat.
You know me. It's. I mean, this is the. It's not too far of a jump. Once again, Edgar Wright inspired. Love it. It's my favy. I like it. The lead actor, not in good graces as much anymore. Baby Driver. Ansel Elgort either was gross or said some gross shit. Movie itself, great. Jamie Foxx, I actually liked it. I think you weren't a big fan of Jamie Foxx, if I remember correctly, Alonzo.
Oh, it's not Jamie Foxx. I hate this movie. Like, I adore almost everything Edgar Wright ever did, but boy, do I hate Baby Driver.
There you go.
And I'm in the minority, but woo.
But that's why we love you, Alonzo, because when the takes are hot, they're always piping hot. You know, you don't come with some bullshit whack takes.
I got the gloves on.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
The big mitts.
So, yeah, some people have the most lukewarm ass takes. And I'm like, get out of here. If it ain't spicy, get it off the TL. Speaking of spicy, it's time for our five-star reviews. If you leave us a spicy five-star review, we'll read it on the air. Yes, you heard that right. This review is from John. Due to my own foolishness, I cannot log into iTunes, but I wanted to show some love how I could. So here's my emailed five-star review. As the podcast has evolved through various hosts and co-hosts, so has my outlook on film and the world at large. It's challenged my expectations and morals all for the better, as I feel that through the discussions on the show, I've become a better listener and a better human male. It's wonderful, it's entertaining, it's essential listening. I'd also like to admit that I did not get the Fate of the Furious F8 connection until I listened to that episode. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm not alone. Okay. There's a few fast fans that are driving a little slower, and it's all good. We're going to catch up once we get to the finish line.
That nose is going to kick in.
That was beautiful. And I'd like to thank anyone who endeavors to be an active listener rather than a passive listener. I think it's nice to have. I try and do that when I listen to things. That brought a little tear to my eye, John.
If you're going to be a passive listener, be better at it. Like, latch on to something they said earlier in the first part when you were still listening. Hold on to that and then re-repeat it. That was like, yeah, it was crazy when Cheryl said that to you. Boom.
Look, and if you're going to be passive, we still appreciate the click. Don't get us wrong.
Yeah. But just listen to the whole thing if you're going to be passive. Just make sure. We got to get that listen. Drea, Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. It's always great to have you here. Truly a highlight to my week.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. It's Christmas, Carol.
Yes. Speaking of Christmas, if you'd like to give us a Christmas gift and support this show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. Or if you'd like to get a Christmas gift for someone else and want to purchase a Jumbotron, go visit MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal it's $100 for a personal message like Merry Christmas, or $200 for a promotional one like Merry Christmas from Starbucks. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY8031664. And if you'd like to leave a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod, or our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien, our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.